This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As President Clinton's fate is placed in the hands of the Senate, political satirist Al Franken is imagining what it would be like if he were president. He's written a new book called Why Not Me? The Inside Story of the Making and Unmaking of the Franken Presidency. His book charts his campaign, his fluke election, and his forced resignation after 144 days in office. The book includes all the documents of the Franken presidency, the press interviews, the self-made memoir, the Bob Woodward expose, and the embarrassing private journals which were published after the Supreme Court ruled unanimously that they were not protected by executive privilege. Al Franken's previous book is the bestseller Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot. Franken is an alumnus of Saturday Night Live and now stars in the newly revived TV series Late Line, a satire about a late-night TV news program. Let's start with a reading from the new book. Here's candidate Franken drawing the line between his public and private life. He's married to Franny, who he met after college.
Although a child of the 60s, Franny harbored some traditional views on the sanctity of marriage, views that I now share in principle. I admit that during the SNL years, I caused pain in my marriage, specifically the sort of pain that might have been caused if I had been repeatedly unfaithful to my wife and spent a number of holidays and anniversaries away from home in the company of a series of mistresses. When I decided to run for president, I knew there would come a time when I would have to address this issue. It's become an unfortunate fact of life that anyone running for president in this day and age must not only present a compelling vision for the future of the country, which is time-consuming enough, but also expose his private life to the closest possible scrutiny. As others have pointed out, I am not perfect. No one is perfect. Not my opponent, whoever that may be. He or she is just a man, like me. I don't think the American public wants a president who has never had any problems. They want a president who can solve problems. And my wife and I have solved our problems time and time again. With that in mind, I want to set a few ground rules for the forthcoming campaign. First of all, having already acknowledged causing pain in my marriage, I will not dignify with an answer any further questions concerning my past, present, or future sexual behavior. This ground rule should not be regarded as an admission that I am currently involved in any improper relationships. It is simply my attempt to elevate the level of discourse beyond the tawdry obsessions of tabloid journalism. The second ground rule is much like the first ground rule. It is simply that I will not confirm or deny any reports of my involvement in any improper sexual relationships. Again, nothing about this ground rule should be construed as an admission of anything. Third, I will not be drawn into a debate about what is or is not a proper sexual relationship or, like I said, whether or not I'm having one. I'm just not going to talk about that. Fourth, my facial expression while I am listening to other people discuss improper sexual relationships should not be construed one way or the other. Also, I would caution the media against employing body language experts or voice stress tests in order to determine whether or not I'm having improper sexual relations. If you do, I will sue you. The next ground rule is a little complicated, so please read it carefully. If at any point during my candidacy or my term in office I am accused by a woman of having had improper sexual relations with her, my silence should be interpreted as a sincere belief that the woman in question is crazy or a skank or both, although it would not be appropriate for me to say so out loud. Finally, listing these ground rules in no way precludes my coming up with more ground rules later.
That's Al Franken reading from his new book, Why Not Me? The Inside Story of the Making and Unmaking of the Franken Presidency. Al Franken, do you ever wonder who in their right mind now would go into politics?
Not me. I wouldn't. Part of the reason I wrote this book was that after my last book, Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot, a number of people came up to me and asked me to run for public office, or suggested I do it. And I explained to them I would be a very bad office holder. Part of what this book is about is sort of proving that. Because in it, I become president, and I'm a terrible president.
And you're subject to terrible mood swings.
Yes. Yes, and ultimately the Joint Congressional Committee to investigate the president's mood swings subpoenas my diaries, and which are very incriminating, and I must resign.
Listen, if you really were running for office, do you think Larry Flynt would be investigating your private life?
No, because I'm a Democrat. I it's a little embarrassing to have Larry Flynt sort of on your side. You know, although he has done some great things that a lot of people don't know about. Because of him, every sex shop in California has a wheelchair access ramp.
Is that just a joke or is that true?
No, that's a joke.
Just checking. I'm trying to improve my reputation as the worst audience in the world.
No, well, I'm testing the joke, and you didn't get it, so it
no,
succeeded.
I just wasn't sure if it was true.
It could have been true.
So what do you think of Flynt's approach to unmasking hypocrisy as he describes it?
Well, you know, to me... It's sort of an alcoholic has to hit bottom before he can start recovering. It feels a little like we're hitting bottom on this politics of personal destruction. So I think we have him to thank. if Larry Flynt is sort of dictating what's going on now, I think it might be a wake-up call that we should stop this.
All of this is forcing us to imagine all politicians having sex lives and what their sex lives are like. And gosh, I mean, even Bob Dole is doing Viagra commercials. Would you compare this to your image of politicians when you were young and the presidents were Eisenhower, JFK, LBJ, Nixon?
Well, yeah, when I was young, I couldn't imagine JFK having sex.
Well, what about LBJ, though, or Eisenhower?
Well, Ike evidently, of course, had an affair, you know, and you got to cut the guy some slack. He had a lot of responsibilities then during the war, and he was away from home, and LBJ evidently was a bit of a philanderer. So, and you know, I mean, our past presidents have not had spotless moral lives. Jefferson evidently had sex with a slave, which is an improper relationship, if you think about it, on at least two counts. First of all, if you have sex with a slave, what message is that sending to the other slaves? You know, oh, yeah. I see. If I have sex with the master, I get to be a house slave. You know,
are there
and FDR, had sex with a woman, not his wife. We've heard that Eleanor Roosevelt may have had sex with a woman, not her husband.
My guess is political satirist Al Franken. He has a new book in which he imagines his own successful run for the presidency. It's called "Why Not Me: The Inside Story of the Making and Unmaking of the Franken Presidency." Why did you decide to write a book that follows through the premise that you decided to run for president and actually got elected?
Well, it was an opportunity, I thought, to fantasize, one, about running for president and winning. And the other is it gave me an opportunity to basically talk about the process of running for president and, and make a scathing satire of the political process. Which I think I've done, and again, it was kind of addressing this idea that some people thought I'd be a fit office holder.
Did people seriously suggest that you run for office?
Yeah. Well, here's the deal. I like they think I'm intelligent. I have some notoriety. I'm fairly, somewhat well known. I'm obviously interested in politics. I'm used to being on camera, and I'm very good looking. So, and I've been married for 23 years and have two beautiful children. And so people have said to me, "Why don't you run for office?" And this is my answer. You'll see. I would be terrible. I'm very indecisive.
What reasons does candidate Al Franken give for running?
Very few reasons. But he basically, why not me, is very operative when as an answer to that question. He in the first part of the book, I have the first little section of the book is that sort of official campaign autobiography, like Jimmy Carter wrote Why Not the Best. And I write this little book called Daring to Lead, in which it explains why I should be president. But it's very unsatisfactory in terms of if you read it, you would not want me to be president. But somehow in this I win.
Now, the book jacket for this phony political autobiography, Daring to Lead, has a cover that parodies Newt Gingrich's book cover. You want to describe
right.
it?
Yeah, in Daring to Lead, in which, by the way, I explain that I am the son of the son of immigrants and the son of a daughter of a son and daughter of immigrants. So that's one of the reasons to vote for me. But anyway, in Daring to Lead... let me look at the. It's me with a golden retriever and a leather jacket and a plaid shirt and kind of work boots and on a tree stump outdoors. It's exactly like Gingrich's Lessons of... What was his book, Lessons of Leadership?
I forget what the title was, but the cover of Newt Gingrich's book seemed to be about proving that he was actually a real casual guy with a nice leather jacket.
Yeah, which is what I do in this.
Right.
I prove it.
Right. And you,
there's a picture of me doing that. And that's the proof.
And even though this book doesn't really exist, it has a ghostwriter. Tony Schwartz.
Well, yeah. that's right. Daring to Lead by Al Franken with Tony Schwartz. I just figured the candidate Al Franken would have a ghostwriter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, Newt Gingrich is one of the people you satirized in your previous book, Rush Limbaugh mm-hmm. is a Big Fat Idiot. Did you ever expect that Newt Gingrich was going to end up resigning from being Speaker and resigning from the House?
Yeah, I was very disappointed because he's just a great guy to kick around. But, in an odd way, I think that at least he was a man of he sort of had a large vision. I mean, he had an inflated view of his own role in the world, but there were times when he was statesmanlike, when certainly in foreign policy, and I think we're going to, in an odd way, miss the man.
My guest is political satirist Al Franken. His new book about the Franken presidency is called Why Not Me? We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is political satirist Al Franken. His new book, Why Not Me?, imagines what it would be like if he ran for president, won, and was forced to resign. The book includes Franken's official political autobiography, Daring to Lead. The kind of campaign autobiography that you parody in your book is usually so filled with self-mythology about how the person got to the point where they are today.
Yes.
All the hard work that they did and the problems that they overcame at home and in their profession and the problems their parents overcame and so on. How does the candidate, Al Franken, self-mythologize himself?
Well, the candidate, Al Franken, is sort of a combination of the real Al Franken. So he talks about... his years at Saturday Night Live and discovering that people, the audiences just loved him. And talks about growing up in Minnesota. I grew up in Minnesota. Candidate Franken grew up in Christ Haven.
Small town. Why did you choose that name?
I just thought it'd be fun to, as part of the mythology, to be the only Jew in a small town. And so we own Franken's department store, which had three departments, lawn furniture, menswear clothes, and driveway sealants. And my father, Herman Franken, became very bitter when the store went bankrupt and started suing the town for to take down the nativity scene at Christmas. And... as a result, I was ridiculed by other kids, and once another student drew a swastika on my forehead in Magic Marker, and it was, looking in the mirror, I could see what that was anti-Semitism. It's plain as the swastika on my forehead. So I talk about, you know, I become the only Jewish, the first and only Jewish president. The first, because the second one is Joe Lieberman. Joe Lieberman's my vice president in this. And when I resign, Joe Lieberman becomes the president.
Did you read a lot of campaign autobiographies before writing your own phony one?
I read Jimmy Carter's. I read Lamar Alexander's, which was more conversations with people as he traveled the country.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't. He walked. Kennedy Franken takes a lesson from Lamar Alexander. He pledges to walk the state of New Hampshire diagonally and then side to side. But it turns out to be a very slow process. So I read his, which was pretty ridiculous, and I looked at a couple others. George Bush's, the Doles had one as a couple. Sometimes candidates tend to give you a plan, their plan. That was what the Clinton one was.
There's some things that you just really capture well about how politicians often speak. And just one small example here is the way that men in politics often talk about their great relationships with their wives, and they don't realize how condescending they're actually being toward their wives in this description. So candidate Al Franken says, "The most important person in my life is Franny Franken. Not just my wife. She's not just the mother of my children. She's not just the woman who cleans my house. She's also my best friend. By that, I mean we have sex together. But after the sex, we often have a conversation."
Yeah, I always love it when candidates say, "My best friend, my wife. Come on up here, honey." You know, and my second best friend, my kid. And my third best friend, my other kid. And my fourth best friend, my father. My fifth best friend is my uncle, who has an incredible story, and I'll bring him up here and he can tell. You know, it's, it is a, I love patronizing women. It's one of my favorite things.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Al Franken. He's the author of the new book, Why Not Me? The Inside Story of the Making and Unmaking of the Franken Presidency. You had a real political advisor help you with this book, Norm Ornstein. How did he help you?
Well, Norm is my my campaign manager and becomes my chief of staff. Norm is a really good friend of mine. He's a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and he's also a Jew from Minnesota. So, but Norm and I have been friends, pretty good, real good friends since '92, and he just, you know, I just pick his brain.
What kind of things do you talk with him about?
Well, the first thing I did was I assembled Norm and Mandy Grunwald and Howard Fineman. We had lunch. I took them to lunch down in Washington, and Howard came up with my campaign strategy. Which my issue, which is ATM fees. That's my only issue, is eliminating ATM fees. And it works because of a break, the millennium bug, the Y2K only affects ATM machines. And since that was my only issue, I look prescient, and I've tied Vice President Gore to the banks, as I've colored him as a stooge for the banks, and everything just works, and I that's why I beat Gore in the Iowa caucuses, and Gore attacks my brother Otto Franken, who is was part of Team Franken. He is a recovering sex addict and alcoholic, but he's my brother, and when Gore attacks him, that it's all over for Gore.
Al Franken will be back in the second half of the show. His new book is called Why Not Me? The Making and Unmaking of the Franken Presidency. He stars in the newly revived TV series Late Line, a satire about a late-night TV show. There are two episodes this week, tonight at 9 and tomorrow at 9:30 on NBC.
I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with political satirist Al Franken. His new book examines the strange state of American politics by imagining what it would be like if Franken ran for president, won, and was forced to resign after 144 days. The book is called Why Not Me? The Making and Unmaking of the Franken Presidency. In the acknowledgments for your book, you thank Dick Morris for agreeing to have his picture taken for the book, even though he wasn't happy about his portrayal in the book.
Yes.
And as an example of his portrayal in the book, I thought I would ask you to read something from page 130. And this is from your campaign diary. This is an excerpt. It's called Notes from Staff Interviews.
And so yeah,
go ahead.
This is a point in the campaign where I'm actually have picked up some momentum. And now I'm looking for a real high-level sort of campaign consultant, media advisor. So notes from staff interviews. Ed Rollins, interesting ideas about winning support in inner cities, but very sleazy. Use ideas, but not him. No. Pat Caddell, sad face, loser mentality. No. James Carville, give that act a rest, buddy. It's tired. No. Peggy Noonan, couldn't understand what the hell she was talking about or what she was doing here. Struck me as desperate. No. David Gergen, too wishy-washy. No. Harold Ickes, he scared me. And if he scares me, then he's likely to scare others. No. Dick Morris, I like him. A can-do, go-getting, straight-shooting, hard-hitting, looking in the eye, no BS kind of guy. He told me he wasn't just going to tell me what I wanted to hear. Like that about him. Also told me I have a good chance of winning. Yes. And the last part, the Franken presidency is basically, as you know, told through the Bob Woodward book on the Franken presidency's first 100 days called The Void. And what I really like this section because The Void is pure Woodward. It's and one of the things is that Woodward tends to do is rely on over rely on one source, and in this case is obviously Dick Morris. So it's a very self-serving story for Morris.
Morris is the deep throat of the book about you.
Yeah, he's obviously the deep throat, and also the Void is full of unnecessary detail.
That's right.
Which is one of my favorite.
Do you want to give an example?
Aspects. Well, Woodward in The Void just tells you the weather all the time for no reason. But it's Woodward basically saying I've done a lot of research, but it's usually just unnecessary. He says in the introduction that he said overall more than 250 people were interviewed. Some as many as 250 times, and a few by me personally. Dialogue and quotations have been recreated based on what I think the participants probably said. When someone is said to have thought or felt something, that description comes from my research assistant, Gary, who is particularly good at that kind of thing. When someone is said to have smelt something, Gary means that they either thought they smelt it or felt they smelt it. For all intents and purposes, these concepts may be regarded as interchangeable. Weather conditions cited were obtained from my editor's neighbor's son, Paul Zervos, a 33-year-old idiot savant who can remember the weather conditions for every hour of every day of his life, even though he's unable to dress himself without assistance.
There's a lot of real people, obviously, who figure into your book. And I'm wondering if you had a lot of lawyers reading the book before it was published to prevent the possibility of lawsuits.
Well, no. Yes. They did read the book. It was vetted by the Delacorte lawyers. But the basic, it's satire. So you can pretty much, you know, if Larry Flint can do an ad where Jerry Falwell is in an outhouse, you know, having incest with his mother, and it's protected by the Supreme Court. I think my stuff is protected. But the Delacorte people did make me put a disclaimer on the book.
Which, of course, is very funny.
Well, yeah. I mean, The part of the disclaimer that I liked the most we took out, which was just the phone number of the lawyer that made me put the disclaimer in.
Well, getting back to Larry Flynt a second, I mean, what you said is actually true, that the case that Larry Flynt took before the Supreme Court, or that took Larry Flynt before the Supreme Court, set a precedent that actually enables you to be free with your satire.
Yes. God bless Larry Flynt, the First Amendment champion.
What an ambiguous figure he is.
But as I say, you know, all those ramps at the sex shops in California, which isn't true.
I'm still laughing.
Good.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Al Franken, and his new book imagines an Al Franken presidency. It's called Why Not Me? The Inside Story of the Making and Unmaking of the Franken Presidency. Did you watch a lot of the impeachment hearings, and have you been watching the opening of the Senate trial?
I have been watching as much as I can. I was working, I've been working a lot too, but yes, I've watched a lot, and if I miss stuff, I turn on C-SPAN late at night and catch it again.
Is there any congressman or senator who you've had a change of heart about watching them?
Wow, that's a good question. I don't think so. Let's see. That's a very good question. I'm trying to think. I'll go through these people. Henry Hyde, I'm a little surprised at. I think Lindsey Graham is someone who I've met and liked, and he feels like he's going a little off the deep end. I didn't really change, you know, I wasn't that impressed with Maxine Waters. She was a little harsh. I mean, it was amazingly partisan in the impeachment hearings, and I wasn't that impressed with the whole group. Although I like Barney Frank.
He has a very good sense of humor.
Yeah, I think he's a funny guy.
Do you think that, do you agree with people who say that the impeachment hearings and the subsequent trial is an extension of the culture wars of the 60s?
I've read a lot of that, and sometimes you look at these guys and you say, yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, Bob Barr in 1969 was, you know, the guy who didn't like me because I had long hair. It turns out he might have some personal problems of his own, Bob Barr. I think there's an element of that. There's an element of anger, self-righteousness, and indignation. Maybe on both sides, but I particularly feel it coming from the president's accusers. And it reminds me of some of the same feelings that it reflects the same kinds of feelings that I saw during the 60s and early 70s.
Is it easier to be a political comic during a time when politics has become the national soap opera?
I don't know. I think there's always stuff to do. I do believe that in certain ways that because this whole thing has been so salacious, that it has been in a way too easy to do comedy about it. So I'm glad I got to write a book and really take my time and really develop a story and write it really about the whole political process than having to go on late night television night after night and do the latest joke about oral sex.
The strange thing, I think, about what's happening now, I would imagine the strange thing for a political comic about the whole Clinton scandal and the impeachment is that on the one hand, it's a really serious, austere process that's underway, and on the other hand, there's so much that's just really kind of comic about it.
Really?
But anyways, the austerity is constantly there, though.
Yeah, you have this incredible, you know, it's the first impeachment.
Exactly.
In over 100 years, like 130 years, and it's a big deal.
Yeah, exactly.
These guys decided to impeach him over this, and Henry Hyde said before the impeachment hearing started was that you can't do this on a partisan basis. This has to be bipartisan. But evidently, he changed his mind. So they have taken the very incredibly serious step of impeaching the president for lying about, having sex with Monica Lewinsky, which what I'm worried about is that we're going to have these witnesses, and she's going to have to testify as to where he touched her, because part of the first article of impeachment is perjury. And he said that his testimony in the Paula Jones deposition had been true, and in the Paula Jones deposition he said that he hadn't had sex with her under the definition provided him by the Paula Jones attorneys, who said that it involved touching someone else on either, I guess, the genitals, the buttocks, or the breast with the intent to arouse or gratify. So this may come down to the president having to testify that he did touch her breast, but that it wasn't for the intent of arousing or gratifying, but that it was for balance. I mean, that's what this may come to if the House managers have it their way, and that we'll have a long drawn out with witnesses. That's what it could come down to.
Al Franken, his new book is called Why Not Me? The Making and Unmaking of the Franken Presidency. This is Fresh Air.